Good morning, colleagues from the department and our support team. It's so unfortunate today, the venue that we are in, we'll just need to shout. We don't have mics, but I think it's not that much open in such a way that we can't hear each other. And I believe I'm audible to everyone here. Okay, thank you very much. Let me welcome Honorable Waters. Whenever I want to say Waters, I say Ollis. I don't know what Honorable Ollis has done to me.
I've lost weight.
I can see you've lost weight. Thank you very much, Honorable Waters. From the office of the Speaker, we did receive your petition that you have submitted in terms of rule 347, and we are obliged to come and listen to you. And as we can see, we have invited the Department of Basic Education together with the Provincial Department of Basic Education in Gauteng, because they are the ones who must come and listen. We are all going to listen, but they must give responses and answers where it's needed so that we can be able to take your petition forward. But as we received it, we are going to be giving you an opportunity to tell us more on what is happening, because from what you received, yes, we forwarded to the department for them to prepare. On our side as a portfolio committee, one thing that when we receive such a petition, such a complaint, is that we have to look at the issues of accessibility. Does it mean learners are not able to access education, the issues of quality education? When you talk of these pressure points, there are things that we would love the department to respond to, but you are going to be given a chance just to tell us more, brief us more on what you have submitted. Then after that, we'll allow the department, both DBE and the provincial department, just to come up and make a sort of a presentation, tell us what is the situation, how are the things in this area, Greenstone area. As you raise the issue of the schools that are not in plan for the future, is it a pressure point? What are the plans that the department have? And I think after that we'll be able to wrap up our discussions and give it back to the speaker and to say this is what we have found as a committee. But as we are saying, indeed, when we say education is a societal issue, it does not only concern us. The thing that we have done, we are so much appreciative of, because we are always saying as a portfolio committee, we might not be in all the areas and all the points at the same time. So whoever raises things, we really appreciate that, so that we can sit down like this and discuss for the benefit of our learners, for public quality education. That is what we appreciate a lot. But maybe because I believe we don't know each other that much, Honorable Waters. I know with you, I address you, everyone knows you now that this is Honorable Waters, but it will be good for us to start with the introductions. I know we've got a number of apologies. The traffic in Cape Town today, I think it's due to the bus strikes that is there, is just terrible. I know other members are on the way, but they will find us pushing already. So I would love the honorable members to introduce themselves. Then after that, I will give the chance to the department to do so. Can I start? Yes, you can start, honorable member.
Good morning, everybody.
Thank you.
I am a member of the Education.
Thanks so much.
I'm Michael Waters, the author of the petition, the person that submits the petition.
Okay, thank you so much. Can I give to you, Mr. Mafoko, to lead with the introduction?
Thank you, Chair. Good morning. I'm Tony Mafoko from the Department.
You know, before you even continue, we'll have problems with people like Mr. Mafoko with soft voices today, because you learn to shout. We need that soft Stuart voice today.
I like to voice.
Okay.
Okay, again, I'm Tony Mafoko from the Department.
Okay, thank you.
morning, honorable members and colleagues. My name is Kelisani Baloyi, Chief Director, Infrastructure at Housing Department of Education.
Good morning, honorable chairperson and members. My name is Edward Musuwe. I'm the Superintendent General for the Housing Department of Education.
Thank you very much. Then, can I then afford an opportunity to Honorable Waters just to brief us more on the petition that you have submitted, just to give us that clearer picture on what is happening in this Eden Bay area, Greenstone area? Yeah, just tell us more of the schools, the pressure that you're talking about, the future plans, yeah, so that we will get it direct from you then.
Okay. I'm just going to talk to it, Chair.
Yes.
And thank you very much for inviting me. I really appreciate it. And good morning to other honourable members and to the officials. Those that have come from Gauteng. So basically, what has happened, I don't know if you know Gauteng at all, Chair.
I do have
but
a
okay, anyway,
an
this
idea.
Is the Greenstone area is a massive development that has sprung up over the last, what, 5-7 years or so, around there. It's I would say about 5,000 households, if not more. It's huge, right? And there's not one public school that's been built in this area to accommodate the children. So obviously, parents are forced then to send their children to the schools in Edenvale. Now the schools in Edenvale, there's three primary schools. There's Eastleigh Primary School, there's Eden Glen Primary School, there's four. Dunvegan Primary School and Hurleyvale Primary School. All these schools are bursting at the brims already, and I'm sure the department will show us figures which will prove what I'm saying. So the fact is there's been no planning by the department to accommodate learners, or future potential learners, at the Greenstone development. Coupled with that, and there's parliamentary replies here, I've got one open, that states, I mean, there's, as you know, Edenvale is close to Tembisa and Alexandra. So also a lot of children from those communities come to Edenvale, to the schools there. And they travel long distances. I mean, the reply to my question, one of the questions that I've asked about the area, says that, for example, Eastleigh Primary School is a 3 kilometer radius away from Tembisa and Alexandra, and it's not. It's closer to 17 kilometers away. So those kids have to travel far. So the department doesn't know how far Tembisa is away from their schools. Other. And so my point is, I mean, even if you go to Tembisa, Chair, and Birchacres, I know you started to build a school in Birchacres Extension, you just started clearing the ground, although it's behind by 6 months already. The fact is all the schools are bursting at the brims, and the children are not getting quality education. It's not because the teachers are bad or the teachers don't care, it's because there's too many children in the classrooms in that area. And there's been no planning, as far as I see, from the department. The only reason why the Birch Acres Primary School is being built, which is still far away from Greenstone, by the way, is because the community was burned tires, you know, and the mayor promised them a school. That's the only reason why they're having a school now built. So I don't know if the residents of Greenstone need to go and start burning tires or whatever in order for a school to be built in their area. But these are the conditions on the ground, Chair, and I've been to all the primary schools in Edenvale, and the principals tell me they can't accept any more children. They're bursting at the seams. You know, so they've built additional classrooms. The parents at the school pay additional school fees in order to get extra teachers in, but then the MEC insists that if you get an extra teacher through the cost of the parents, they must still have 40 kids per classroom. It's just unacceptable. And I think the department is reneging on its responsibility to ensuring, first of all, quality education, but over and above that, easily accessible education, where children don't have to travel kilometers and kilometers at huge cost to their parents to get to a school. So that's in a nutshell, Chair. I would like to obviously ask questions once the presentation's been concluded, but that prompted the petition from the Greenstone residents. And then, just my last point, in this reply, and this is quite astounding. It says here, this is from the Minister of Education, so I'm not making it up, I will send it to you. It says, the parents of the learners
residing... What was the question?
Basically, has the department undertaken studies to determine the total number of children who live in the Greenstone residential area in Johannesburg? Because it actually falls into Johannesburg Greenstone, although it borders Edenvale, which is Ekurhuleni, just on the border, no? Which borders Edenvale and Ekurhuleni Metropolitan Council. If not, why not? And in the reply, they don't tell me how many children are living there, so they obviously haven't done any studies themselves. What informed the decision of her department not to build any schools in the specified area? There's no answer to that. And if so, what are the details of the study? But I'll tell you what the minister says. The parents of the learners residing at Greenstone apparently are not interested in these public schools. I mean, but where's the study that proves that? Are apparently not interested. Not are not interested, are apparently. So how's the minister making this up? On the basis of what? So it seems to me there's been a knee-jerk reaction to this, and the fact is there's been no forward planning by the department. And so this only came last week, actually, so it's quite fortuitous that I've been invited here today. So anyway, so I'm deeply concerned about the lack of schools in the general area.
Now, thank you very much, Honorable Waters. Colleagues from the department, we have heard what Honorable Waters have said to motivate even more on the petition that he has, together with the residents of that area that they have submitted to the speaker. With you, you know there are things that you'll always be looking for when it comes to such matters. Because for us, I know you'll go even further, but we need to look at the issue of enrollment in those schools. We have heard honorable members saying the classrooms are just booming there. When, you know, we're looking at the issue of access, are they able to reach those schools? Even the kilometers where you say that we even have learners from Tembisa flooding in to Greenstone, the kilometers that is accessibility, which will translate to the quality of education that they are getting in those schools. But, and also talk to, he mentioned to say the developing area. So for me, he's saying that is a very much a pressure point to you as the department. What are your future plans? Taking it from what you have right now, your enrollment moving forward. So, yeah, let me just hand over to you. Mr. Mafuku, let me hand over to you. You, from your delegation, you can tell us who is going to be leading in the presentation and so forth, but let me hand over to you.
Honorable Chairperson and honorable members, thank you very much for the opportunity, and thanks for the petition that has been read and the brief introductory remarks. We, on receiving the petition, Chairperson, developed a comprehensive response to give a sense of where we are. We have a presentation that we have prepared, that rather the committee has received it. And I want to speak to some elements of it.
I'm sorry, do you have a presentation?
Yes, I got it this morning.
Okay.
Because I thought it was important that we predicate the petition to the broader size and shape of the Gauteng Department of Education, which will then give a sense of where we're coming from. Chair, on page 2 of the presentation, we give a sense that the Gauteng education landscape, the landscape of 2,207 schools, public ordinary schools, 218 independent schools that are subsidized by the state, 640 that are non-subsidized. So you are talking about a total of just over 3,000 schools that we have. And it gives you a sense that the bulk of 72% of the total number of schools that we have in the province are actually those that are public. But if you then also add those that that the state subsidizes, you will see that the number goes right up to about 79-80% of the total number of schools that we have. In other words, in our view, it's an indication of the level of access that we provide. We've also gone to Chair to give a sense in the presentation of the number of educators that we have. We have a total complement of 55,000 state-paid educators in our schools, in public schools, whereas SGBs only appoint about 8,600 of those teachers. In independent schools, the independent school subsidizes 5,000 teachers, and non-subsidized would be about 12,000 teachers. Gauteng has a total of 81,000 teachers, both in the independent school sector as well as the public education sector. And I think these numbers are important because it gets to give you a glimpse of how big a system we're dealing with. Actually, these numbers make Gauteng the second largest subsystem of education in the country, second to KwaZulu-Natal, Chairperson. In terms of numbers of learners that we have, and we are giving here the numbers that we had in 2017, we had a total of 2,411 young people enrolled in our schooling system in Gauteng, with the bulk of those, 2,411,000. Of that, 2,120 were in our public ordinary schools, in the public schools, whereas 1,112 are found in the other sectors, which translates to 88%. So 88% of our learners are in public schools, and if we were to be looking into subsidized independent schools plus the public schools, you'll be talking way in the region of 93% of learners. So we've also given you a sense of the fee-paying and no-fee-paying schools, because it's an important policy imperative that has been taken, that let's make sure that we submit and provide access to all young people in our province, so that there's no child that's left behind who qualifies to go to schooling. In addition to this, I thought it was important in our response to give a peculiar feature that is predominant in Gauteng, and I know one or other two provinces have this particular feature of in-migration. And it's an important feature to give to place it on record. You will see, Chair, that when you talk of learners that come from Gauteng, over the last 5-6 years, we have seen an increase in the number of young people that are coming for education into Gauteng from other provinces. You will see that in 2013 we had about 86,000. The net effect of in-migration was 86,000 in 2013. In 2017 we are talking 101,000 net migration of young people that come from other areas of the country and outside the country that get into Gauteng. The next slide on page 13 begins to give you a sense of where such levels of in-migration that we have recorded in the province have come out from. So I must indicate, and I'm raising this because we've also now started with online admissions for grade 1 and grade 8 in Gauteng. I think we are one of the few provinces that have started admissions earlier than the normal time when admissions are done, applications are done. Just this year, if I were to be reflecting on this year, as a result of notwithstanding that we have had online application and calling for people to register on time, just in January we had no less than 10,000 walk-ins that came into Gauteng as a result. And it begins to give you a sense of the priorities that people would put on the education system in Gauteng, and people also wanting to ever come to Gauteng. We have given you a sense by representation graphical representation on how those number of learners are indicated, and I don't want to spend a lot of time in respect of the chair. I want to go to jump, with your permission, Chairperson, that I jump and I go to infrastructure planning, because the petition would then have spoken to an aspect of infrastructure planning, suggesting that we may not have a plan on how we do infrastructure. But I thought it was important that we put first on the table for consideration by the committee. On the slide that talks about infrastructure planning, one of the key elements that drives on how we do and we plan for schools in the province is on the basis of data that we collect. So there is an aspect of data collection. There is also a needs analysis beyond data collection, so meaning we get to understand the number of households, we get to understand the number of people that are residing in a specific area, we get to understand the demographics and all of those related issues. We further go on to do a needs analysis, and I must say all of these factors go in a chronological manner. The third aspect is then a project identification in terms of at what point, once we have analyzed the needs, is there a point where we would be, and there would be prioritization of identified needs, because migration would be one point, Chair, and maybe I should have when we spoke to in migration, I should have spoken to areas that you would then begin to see that are impacted more than the others by people moving into the province, and I think that graph would give a sense. Then from a prioritization on the needs that are provided, Chair, then we would then go and deal with the budgeting processes for building new schools. What does data collection say to us, Chairperson? We say when we build new schools, the number of schools that we build or that would be required would be directly linked to the number of learners of school-going age in the province. So we take the totality of the number of children that we have. And the second thing that we are also talking to is that as schools are required in the area where a child would be residing, we also then begin to look in also the needs and the number of learners per residential area that we have. So from a point of view that we have data collection, it informs how we do our planning. That becomes an important element. I must indicate, sir, you might recall that the Constitutional Court had placed on Gauteng a responsibility to go and determine feeder zones. We will submit to the Constitutional Court by November of this year the determinations of feeder zones, because currently how learners are admitted, as a first point, is that you must be living within the area, or you must be working within the area, or you must have a sibling at the school. So those are the three key areas in terms of regulation, either by work, by residential, and by sibling. But there are instances where it has happened that as a result of a previous school, a learner having attended a primary school in X place because of work, then the previous school is a choice, but it's a practice element as much as it is. It's more of a practical thing because of access, more as opposed to it being a policy requirement. So the MEC for Education will be lodging with the Constitutional Court the feeder zones once he has declared them, and we've been given the date of November 2018 to have finalized this particular process. So I thought it was important that we give that element of how data is collected and how that data then begins to inform the number of spaces or schools that would be required. Beyond the data element, Chairperson, we also have to determine on the basis of the number of learners whether there's a need for a school or no school, and whether there are pressures in that particular area. And it's important to note in this regard that we've taken a view and that we build a school where we pick up that there's one for every 1,000 residential units, we will also consider building a primary school. So for every 2,000 residential units, we would want to have one secondary school. But it's an important thing to note that you would do that not with t- taking into account, firstly, the pressures, but secondly, whether when you even when you have those residential units, are there any other spaces that are available? Because what we have picked up in Gauteng as well, and it's, I think it's an important point to make, you find that, and my MEC always says, we have a peculiar system in Gauteng that those that were in that were coming from Africa are now coming into townships. Those that were in townships are now moving to suburbs. Those who are in suburbs are moving to the private. So it becomes a phenomenon of movement. There are instances where you then find that there are schools that may be standing in communities, but those schools are standing empty, notwithstanding that you have X number of units within those communities. And I thought it was an important statement to make. So from a data collection and our analysis, we are able to give that particular level of specification. The second most important aspect after determining the number of learners in an existing or developing residential area, we also look into determining the number of enrollments in existing schools. So you do not just say there is for 1,000 units you want one primary school, but then you find that just within the radius that's available, you are able to find that there's a primary school or a secondary school that's standing empty. Whereas in another area of the province, you might find more pressures than that that would be presented in that area. You therefore, from an order of priority, you would then say we will go and relieve the pressures there as we plan for the new one. Learner distribution per residential area in existing schools is also an element that we look into, as well as the number of residential units. I must indicate here that we use SSA data as well, because it is nothing. It's not that the department will just subtract these numbers. We also do use these specific elements. Chair, we've given you a little more information about how is the collected data captured. And I think in the presentation we give you a sense of the spreadsheet and an indication of those formulas that are used. And because I don't have a computer in front of me, I can't. But those links have been provided for. I think an important thing that we also have to explain here, that there are instances from a cost and other related matters that factors. That in some areas you don't need a new school, but you want to do an extension of the existing facilities. And in that case, we do get to an instance where we determine whether in specific areas we require additional facilities or we would want to build a new school. That is why we also, you would find where in our infrastructure portfolio, you would have a budget that we set aside for new schools. You would have a budget that we set for additions and replacements, and you would have a budget that we set aside for refurbishment and rehabilitation. So those are the three different components, because there are instances where we find that a school, given the mass and length space that it has, that it can still provide for grounds and all of those related elements, but because it was built for 800 learners and you can't afford in Gauteng to have a school for 800 learners, you are able to say, and there is still physical space that you can provide for, you would say that there could be a need for addition, so that you are able to provide existence of additional elements in the system. We have given you then a sense, Chair, in the following, in the areas that come up, that other than additions, from an infrastructure point of view, we also deal with rehabilitation, because what we had picked up is that as population dynamics grew, there has also been a need that some of our schools are 100 years old. Now, the one way to do is to ensure that we preserve those schools, because they have the greatest amount of real estate, but what had become important is that we must also be able to provide for rehabilitation as well as keep these schools in an environment or in conditions that will ensure that it will preserve what they look like. So from a need analysis, we have norms that tell us whether we can determine whether a school is full or not. So the capacity of the school, and I heard Honorable Waters talking about how principals of schools complain that they can't take more learners. In fact, the head of department of a department is the one who determines whether a school is full or not. It is not a principal of a school. It is not the SGB of the school, but it is a role and function of the superintendent general of a province. However, what we do, we go and do, because the NIMS database provides us information, but we also go to determine the spaces that are available in a particular school. We do what, on an annual basis in Gauteng, we do what we call a capacity audit. And that capacity audit is that which tells us whether there is still space for learners or not. And at a particular point when we know that a school is full, we are able to declare it full. And we can't take, unfortunately for some schools, it has gone to a point where we would not be able to, in some township schools, if I were to be more precise, where we would find that we have had to provide for additional mobile classrooms because there is no land space. But how we have done that, we've given you an example of how we do a calculation of whether we can know the number of existing classrooms, whether they meet the criteria or whether there is overcrowding or otherwise. The example that I'm giving you here is that if we anticipate, for example, it talks about new schools, there's a number 4,000. And it's an oversimplified method for analyzing for a new school because we follow a due process. Our anticipated numbers, if we anticipate that there will be 4,000 learners, the number of classrooms that would be required when we have a class of 1 to 40 learners, we know that we require 100 spaces. If we have 100 spaces that are required and we pick up that maybe the existing number of classrooms was 60, so it therefore tells us that the shortage that we have is 40. And either through an addition and or if there's a requirement for a new school, we are able to pick up from that type of level of data that we have. We have given scenarios, and I don't want to go into those different scenarios. I think these scenarios begin to give you a sense, Chairperson, of how the number of learners that we have in specific areas would relate to how we utilize the space in each of the cases. Chair, there's a map that we have drawn out. We have a map that we have drawn we've drawn out of the percentage learner growth that the province has been experiencing in the province. And you will see Gauteng has the Gauteng Department of Education operates and runs education in 15 districts. The 15 districts are then spread into or are organized into regions. And we have currently four regions because we are now moving to getting the fourth region. We have the Tshwane region that caters for, the Tshwane region would cater for the district Tshwane South, and just for information of members of the committee, Tshwane South would be covering the, if you start from Atteridgeville and all the related areas of Atteridgeville, Mamelodi, the city center in Pretoria, and it goes with Pretoria West, that would be what you call Tshwane South. Tshwane West would be part of Pretoria North in Gauteng. It goes right up to areas that were incorporated from the old, from the northwest, Garankuwa, as well as Mabopane and parts of Soshanguve, all those form part of Tshwane West. Then you would get Tshwane North. Tshwane North is an area that covers the area from, it borders Limpopo on the Hammanskraal side, so it has schools that were incorporated in Tshwane. It also covers parts of schools that you find in Pretoria, in your, where the Department of International Relations is, what's that area called? Pretoria, part of Pretoria North, as well as the aspect of Acadia and Central Pretoria. Then
you would find that the Tshwane region also then extends to the area east of Pretoria, and it goes all the way up to Cullinan and Bronkhorstspruit. That's where, unfortunately, we lost the young people that were coming from Mpumalanga getting education into Gauteng last year, the Verena tragedy. That's a region, that's one region that we will be talking about. And I'm talking about it because it would have indicated it here. Then we have the Ekurhuleni region. The Ekurhuleni region has got three districts. The one district is called Ekurhuleni North, and Ekurhuleni North covers Tembisa as one of the largest, biggest townships that we have. It covers Eden Vale, it covers parts of Benoni and Primrose. And this is Greenstone falls within Ekurhuleni North. So it is that area of Kempton Park, Eden Vale, parts bordering Tembisa, and all of those related areas. I thought it was important. Then we have Ekurhuleni South. Ekurhuleni South would start from Germiston. It goes to townships of Katlehong. It goes to Vosloorus. It goes right up to Zonke Zizwe as you move along Heidelberg Road if you are in Gauteng and you're moving towards almost just before you get to Heidelberg. That's where Ekurhuleni South would be dealing with. Then the last part of Ekurhuleni region cover areas from Springs, Duduza, Devon, and all of those related areas. So I thought, Chair, I needed to give this perspective of the map of Gauteng and some of the areas that honorable members may be able to pick up from the name. Then we have the Johannesburg region. Then the Johannesburg region has got five districts. It has got the Johannesburg East district, and I should indicate Johannesburg East district shares borders with Ekurhuleni North. Now, this is one of the areas in the province where we do no longer have land space even to build schools. You are finding schools that are bursting to the seams in the order of 2000 or plus, and that forms part of Ivory Park. Then it goes on, it extends to Midrand, and it has suburban schools, it goes to Alexandra, and it catches parts of Woodmead, Sandton, and it ends up in the north of Johannesburg. That is part of Johannesburg East. Then we have, and Johannesburg East also borders Bezuidenhout Valley and all those suburban areas in Johannesburg. So we have Johannesburg North. Johannesburg North would cover areas from where, if you are in Johannesburg and you are traveling on the M1, also if you are on the M1 going to Pretoria just before you get to Sandton, all schools in town on the left side of the M1 are Johannesburg North. And they go all the way up to Bryanston, the other side. Then you would go to Johannesburg South, which covers the south of Johannesburg, your Glen Vista area, your Malbaten area, your Mondio area, and it catches parts of Deep Kloof. Then Johannesburg Central is Soweto, and Johannesburg West is part of Soweto in Meadowlands, is west of Soweto and the Roodepoort area. That covers all the districts of Johannesburg. We then have Gauteng West, which would be from Krugersdorp and all of those areas that are now bordering the northwest with Gauteng. We have Sidibeng West, which is your Sebokeng, your Sharpeville, your Vanderbijl Park. Part of Vanderbijl Park would be Sidibeng West, Everton included. Then, and all of the surrounding settlements. Then you have Sidibeng East. Sidibeng East would be from part of Vereeniging, part of Sharpeville, and it extends right up to Heidelberg. Chairperson, I've given honorable members a sense of where the landscape of the Gauteng
education department, our pressure points, areas like, at the current moment, areas like Ivory Park, Tembisa, the northern block, the Johannesburg South block, that which covers parts of Diepkloof, that which covers parts of Mondio, that which covers Naturena, in the southern corridor, is the most pressed block. Johannesburg East, in the mid-range area, is the most pressured block. It extends right up to Ivory Park. That's where I say there are schools that are bursting at the seams with over 2,000 young people. We also have the city center, the area in Johannesburg East, that is your Hillbro and all of those. That area is also heavily impacted because currently, as we speak, there are high-rise buildings and the number of people that are in that area compared to the number of schools that we do not have. The one other last area that has highest pressure point is the area in Ekurhuleni South, and it includes your Zonke Zizwe area because there's a lot of human settlements that have come up in that specific area and those surroundings. And I thought I needed to give you a sense, Chair, that you might, when we also talk about planning in Gauteng, and you pick up that we also talk about classroom space, at the point when there is, and because we are also with the online process at the moment, when we are finding challenges of placing learners, it is those specific areas where we find more pressures than any of the other areas. Or I should indicate that the last area that we are finding pressure on is the Tshwane South District. That is also where we're having those specific pressures. Chair, I'm sure all members would also know that Gauteng is the epicenter of urbanization. So while we may be talking of all of these and challenges that we experience, high density area, one of the critical challenges that we have faced as the province and as a department has been the availability of land spaces. So land parcels are becoming a big challenge. And I must say, Chair, however, the department has since, as part of our planning work, because there are instances where we have sites that would have been declared on municipal boundaries and related on drawings as education sites, but you find that the sites that are available are less in size than the number of, than they are able to accommodate schools as the building of schools as would be required in terms of the norms and standards for infrastructure. Because we can't also go build a school and build as if we are building for the history, whereas we are building for the future. And one of the things that we have since picked up that we are dealing with is also where developers are wanting to charge government an arm and a leg for pieces of land. So it's another fight that we have with our sister Department of Infrastructure Development in acquiring land in specific areas. So it begins also to put other elements of competition that we already have in respect of this particular area. The petition finally has said, has the department undertaken studies to determine the total number of children who live in Greenstone residential area in Johannesburg, which borders Eden Vale, in Ekurhuleni, and so on? Chair, I think the presentation was trying to give a context to all of these matters. But just to also indicate that Greenstone borders, and there's a map that shows where Greenstone is. Greenstone has just become a recent development compared to the long-standing other developments that we've had and where we have challenges. However, Greenstone is bordering your areas of Eden Vale, Kempton Park, and those related. There's an aerial map that we have given you a sense. And my colleagues will also talk more because they know the place even more better than I do. What Honorable Waters would have also indicated, and the schools that he indicated are actually indicated in our response as well, that there are schools that are in this area. But what is more important, Chair, that I need to indicate, is that there's a school called Eastleigh Primary, in 2016, had 974 learners. In 2017, it had 994 learners. If we exclude grade R, Eastleigh Primary would have had 978 learners. It shows zero growth. So if you were to be looking into it, you will also note that that school, from a capacity audit point of view, it has a surplus of 8 classrooms on the basis of norms. If we do the capacity audit, it's standing at 76% occupation. Lyle School Nobel Primary, in the same venture, you will see that in 2016 it had 1,119. In 2017, it had 1,135. If you exclude grade R, you will see that it had 1,109. In fact, if anything, you would say that it has gone, it's dropped by, if you were to compare it to 2016. So you will see that it has had zero growth. And it has 6 ordinary classrooms, and we consider it to be 82% occupied. However, if you were to be looking at Eden Glen, Eden Glen is a school that shows 1,250 young people in 2016, 1,270 in 2017. Then with the grade R's, you will see that, in fact, there's an indication there that if you were to have added, and I think we made a mistake, that the numbers should have gone the other way around. With Eden Glen, this is the only school of the primary schools, if we were to be giving an indication, that would have been that in our assessment has a shortage of one classroom on the basis of the ratios. That is why we say only one school in the vicinity of Greenstone is above 100% in terms of capacity as we speak. And that would be Eden Glen. The remainder of schools are not fully occupied. And the department has taken a view that whereas we may be looking at the area in long term, as an immediate pressure point, there's no need to build a school at this point. However, it does not stop us from continuing to look into this area. The challenge there is that the second area, Chair, that we are also picking up is that this area does not have available sites for construction of schools. And what we have seen as a department, we are beginning, and I should share this, it's still to be pronounced as policy, but we are also now beginning to look into how best do we build schools given the limited land space that we have. Whereas in the past you would have found us building schools that were quite elaborate in a place, I think it's more and more beginning to call for high-rise buildings, because you also have to be providing for learners, for space, for play and related matters. Chair, on the basis of that, our response to the petition is that we have taken note of the petition. We have also noted the issues about what the petition would say, but from our assessment, on the basis of data that we have, on the basis of the planning that we have and the pressures that Gauteng is having, both from a point of view of in-migration, the current schools that are bursting at the seams, and how we must also address the backlog. In fact, Gauteng requires no less than 100 schools. If those that build, that have infrastructure capacity were to be building, we require no less, a minimum of 200 new schools in other parts of the province. And that's the work that we are currently dealing with at the moment in respect of this particular area. Chairperson, it is our view, finally, that our studies and data that we have, that the Greenstone and Greater Eden Vale areas do not warrant for a new school infrastructure if existing schools are not fully occupied to capacity. We are of the view that we would have to find a mechanism of dealing with unavailability of sites in general as we deal with our issues of expansion. And I should indicate that through the Provincial Infrastructure Planning Committee, these matters on the expansion of schools is part of the work that we do. Thirdly, Chair, and honorable members, you would recall that one of the greatest elements that schools, that the government has been called to do, is to ensure that we comply with norms and standards for all of our schools. And it is our view that we would want to move with speed to ensuring that all of our schools begin to deal with this. Annually, and it's an important fact to point to make, is that Gauteng requires, or on an annual basis, we have a net effect of 100,000 new learners coming into Gauteng on an annual basis. We are one of the growing subsystems on an annual, the net effect of the number of learners that we have in our province annually over the last 5-10 years has been 100,000 new learners. It begins to show, Chair, that we have pressures of schools, but we do know areas where such pressures are allocated. It's also worth noting, Chair, that our infrastructure budget would also indicate that the provincial government had not only relied on the conditional grant for school infrastructure. The provincial government had also made an allocation from the equitable share component of the provincial government so that we can deal with infrastructure capacity. And some of the challenges that we've had on these matters would be access to land, which is a matter that we continued engaging on with municipalities. But further, notwithstanding that we have both equitable share and conditional grant, funding still remains a problem. If you think that there's 100,000 new learners that come into the province on an annual basis. Chairperson, I want to also recognize the presence of my MEC, Honorable Yusufi, and want to thank you for the opportunity to present.
Thanks, Mr.
Thank you very much, SG. Welcome, MEC.
Thank you so much.
We are very happy. You know, Honorable Waters, one thing we always pride ourselves as this committee is the good relationship that we have with all the provinces. Whenever there are challenges like this, it's just a phone call away and say, can we come together and sit down around the table and discuss whatever we need. So I think we are demonstrating that to you today. They are all here just to come and listen to that. Thank you ever so much, MC.
Thanks, Ben.
That was the presentation from Gauteng. Thank you very much for it. I'm not sure whether there are any additions on this before we open up for discussion.
Yeah.
Can I come to you, Babu Dao?
Thanks, Honorable Chair.
Babu Mufuku.
The last bit from my side, just to explain the process in terms of planning in relation. planning is located in provinces. And provinces submit that information through what is referred to as the UM, the User Hazard Management Plan, which at the national department we assess to ensure that it addresses all the priorities of the national department, the national government, as well as the provincial department, as well as the priorities of the sector. And it is on that basis that funding is allocated to the different provinces. But what should be understood is that planning happens at a local level and not at a national level. What national does is to ensure that all the provinces get such further should be engaged.
Okay. Abaloi, I see your hand. You want to say something?
Thank you very much, Chair. The only thing that I have as an addition to the presentation that the HOD gave is
we are too soft. We are too soft, Abaloi. They
the
can't hear.
The only aspect that I would have as an addition to the presentation that was made by the HOD was that the observation by the petition to say that Greenstone is a developing area is quite correct. Mainly because it's driven, obviously, by the creation of the Greenstone Mall quite recently, but also the neighboring residential units that have been built in the last couple of years. However,
too soft, too soft.
Could you get in the legislature, shout, please?
Yeah. Just shout.
I think I'll start from scratch.
Yeah,
I'll
please.
I was saying the observation that was made by the petition is quite correct to say that Greenstone is a developing area driven by two components. One, the creation of the Greenstone Mall, but also the development of the residential units in the last couple of years in the form of townhouse development and other cluster housing within the particular area. However, the issue of infrastructure provision within the government space also requires that we do an equitable distribution of resources towards infrastructure. The one aspect that is quite key in terms of this has been the issue that is related to the number of units that are required as a result of the residential units that are in a particular area. But also if we were to just take that, it will be an equitable distribution of the resources, mainly because of two reasons. If you look at areas like Johannesburg, for instance, and you relate it to the historic past, the creation of the metro of Joburg as a metro meant that you've got town planning schemes that were from Soweto, Roodepoort, Sandton, and Randburg amalgamating into one metro or one town planning scheme. But then if you were to look at those town planning schemes whereby if there was a formula to say that for every 1,000 units you'd have a school, it might have been applicable to the Randburg area, but it was not applicable to the Soweto area, because if you look at the density within our traditional townships, those townships would have more people in that particular area, and that would not necessarily result in schools being given to those particular areas to service the number of people that are in that particular area. That, in the education space, actually meant that people had to juggle around and to find spaces in surrounding areas, which in this case applies to the Greenstone area, because a lot of the kids that also attend schools within the Greenstone area are not necessarily from the neighboring suburbs, but are coming from our townships, such as Tembisa and Alexandra. So from a resource provision point of view, that's something that we also have to take into account, mainly because there is a huge need for schools within those townships as well, because they are the other issue I think has been covered as well, that to say that we do submit a user asset management plan on an annual basis, whereby these numbers are actually determined and that are submitted to the National Department of Education. Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much. Welcome, Deputy President. Yeah, I think I've addressed you very well. Thank you so much. On a very lighter note, what I'm going to say, you know, Babaloi, I don't want to be personal, not at all. But what I'm going to say, if we are not married yet, I would advise that you get a politician. Those women shout.
From which party?
Across the party line. They just shout, you know. Exactly. No, thank you very much. MEC, I won't give you a chance now.
No,
I would love you to come at the end, because now let me give it back to Honorable Waters, then allow the Honorable Members to engage, because we also need even to engage with you, Honorable Waters, so that what we, the information we get from you, we also engage with the department, then we have a lovely, a lively discussion. But before you even come in, Honorable Waters, for me, I think what has been basic and fundamental, yes, we've got to the history of how things, what is happening in housing, but with the Greenstone area and the schools there, the information that you are getting is to say the schools are not even full to their capacity. What are you saying about that? Yeah, but come in.
Thank you. Chair, can I just thank the MEC for being here? Because of all the petitions I've submitted to Parliament that go before committees, it's the first time an MEC or ministers being present. So thank you very much.
Thanks.
We were actually on the Capital Properties and Council together before we all went off to province or Parliament. Yeah.
Let's hope he's not here
and
just because of that.
And my parents were forcefully evicted from Greenstone.
Your parents?
Yeah.
Let's
what?
Not go there.
Take it up as a president. Chair, thank you very much. I've just got a few questions and I will answer or respond to your question. The first one is to do with when new development happens. It can be private developments or RDP developments. It doesn't actually matter because children will be moving into an area where there's no school. It's a new development. I mean, so what planning takes place? Because you say there's, if, let's say there was a need for school in Greenstone, there's no land for it.
Uh-huh.
Yes. So when a development is approved by a council, isn't the Department of Education involved in that? Because you've got to then say, okay, we need a space for a school.
Uh-huh.
And the school has to be allocated, even if it's a piece of ground, right? Because there's no structure yet. So can you please explain that, please?
Uh-huh.
I don't serve on this committee, and Chair, if I'm asking an obvious question, I do apologize.
Okay.
Then on the capacity of the schools, I do find it strange, Chair, that the schools aren't full to the brim in Edenvale and Timbisa, in fact. Well, you mentioned Timbisa is bursting at the seams. The fact that, so let's just look at Eastleigh Primary School. If, when you say 76%, I mean, that's basically a capacity, under capacity of nearly a quarter of the school, which I find amazing, and I'm sure the MEC does. He's been trying to find places for kids for a long time. You know, I mean, you say 100,000 children come into the system every year additional. I find it amazing any school in Gauteng is 76%. I really do, and I'm not trying to be funny here.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd like to understand how you got to that. You say there's a surplus of 8 classrooms. Now, I don't believe that there's 8 classrooms sitting empty at Eastern Primary School. And if there is, why aren't, that means there aren't teachers allocated to those classrooms. You're probably saying that each class is below 40, which is the norm. That's what you're probably saying. Okay. Now, I don't know if there's any SGB posts at this school. I don't know. My iPad's actually in my office. I would have had notes on that one. But are you taking SGB posts into this calculation when you say 76% under, or 24.4% under-resourced? Or are you just taking government funded posts? So I think that's crucial. The reason why I asked that, Chair, I did ask the Minister a question in Parliament. It was the last year of the year before. And she stated there quite categorically that SGB posts cannot be used in the calculation for the ratio of 40 to 1. They can't. That's what she said to me. And I've got the reply from Kendrick Teacher. So that's why I want to ask that question. So that's the first one about Eastleigh in particular, primary school, and then about the planning for any future development that's happening. How involved are you in those plans? The other questions that I had, Chair, have been answered, because my presentation didn't actually have this last section about Greenstone. It just had the general things. I was wondering when we were going to get to Greenstone, but you got there. And so if I could just get those two replies, I'd appreciate it. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Can we get those responses before I go to other honourable members?
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. To Honourable Walters, thanks for the question. Indeed, just to give a sense on the new approach that the Gauteng provincial government has adopted on human settlements, you would know that for those settlements that are legal you would find that when we know that the human settlement is going to create and establish a settlement in X area, we also want to make sure that there is social infrastructure available. Not only is it about schooling, it is about clinics and related services. Going forward, you would know that from a planning point of view, those aspects are taken in. I mean, the Premier and the government of Gauteng and MEC will speak to that have recently launched a number of mega human settlements. In each one of those areas, there has been provision made for land space, for schools or for school infrastructure and related matters. In respect of school capacity, and I think the question that Honourable Waters raises is this, that why is it that the MEC would still want to be saying I'm fighting for space, but remember, if we had those people that are in Ivory Park residing within the area of Greenstone, that school will be full like tomorrow. But it's because the block that I was indicating, your Ivory Park community, if we were to the Johannesburg South Corridor, the Johannesburg Central Corridor, so you find that's where we have the greatest amount of pressure, unlike in Greece. That's why our conclusion at the moment is that while we know that there may be developments in Greece, though, but in terms of current pressures where in migration and where there's the majority of people requiring schooling, it's not in Greenstone, but it is in those specific areas. And the distances between, I mean, if I were to be taking a child from Glen Vista to Greenstone, it means they must be traveling like 30, 40 kilometers before they get there. And it is in that context that we have challenges of space in this particular area. As it relates to the capacity of Eastleigh, and I would want to also talk to that particular area as well. We look into available classroom space. We would look into, and there are norms that we have also put in respect of this, to say for a teacher to be in a classroom, we require X amount of space, X amount of desks, and the teacher movement must be allowed, and that is how we arrive at that particular level. And it is on that basis that we then get to determine whether a school has reached capacity or other. The overfall, and maybe let me use the overfall case matter as a case in point. That we had determined that the school was underpopulated, underutilized, because there were more spaces. And it's not that, and we were using government posts. Let me also put it that way. We were using government posts. But then at the level in the overfall matter, and I know it's a matter that had been, on the basis of language, we could not get an English class there. But we had formed the view that because there are many classes that can be used, we could then establish it as a dual medium and things like that. So I think that's the basis upon which the capacity, but maybe let me allow my chief director, chairperson of that specific area to further give an additional input.
Sure. Chair, I have the latest figures in terms of how many children are found in all the classes of all the schools and starting with we have 900 students in the classroom. The classroom that they have is 28. The learner classroom ratio is standing at 34.9, which is like, I would say, not over. Because it's even far from reaching.
You can even classroom. Say under, because they
now, the other elite schools, Dan Vegan, has 887 learners, also 28 classrooms. The learner classroom ratio is spent at 31 average. And then in Glen Primer,
the one that is said to be old or populated, in essence, it is not. It has 1,363 learners, and the classrooms are 38. The learner classroom ratio stands at 35. So all these schools are under populated, as the number that we actually calculated or found out just recently this month, actually, for 2018. And then,
Mr. Tao, I think it's the point of order or something.
Just on that, I mean, with even Glenn's 58 classrooms, but some of those are SGB classrooms.
No, I'm not talking about classrooms.
No, but you can't. You see, that's the point. You can't just divide by. You've got to take out.
Actually, if you add SGB post, the numbers go down.
No. No, NEC, what I'm saying is, if they've got 38 classrooms in total, some of them will be. I know that. They've got. I can't give you the exact figure of how many. I don't want to lie to you.
Yeah.
But they've got SGB posts,
yes.
Right? So if they've got 38 classrooms there, right, some of them will be filled by SGB. Even if it's one. So what
but
I'm saying
now
is, if you take... If
correct
you take,
that,
no,
because, yeah.
No, if you take this, you can't go by classrooms. You've got to go by government posts divided by the pupils. The
I want to clarify that, Mr. Honorable Waters, before they come in, because I know that for now, they are talking about classrooms. They're not yet on the teachers. The floor space.
Mm.
There are 38 classrooms. Then... If you want to go further, then we'll go to the number of teachers in the school that will respond to your question that you are raising now. But for now, let us know.
Right.
38
we'll
classrooms, that will translate to 1:35. Then we come up with your question as to say, then how many teachers are there in school? Then we'll get into the issue of the government post or the SGB post.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. Do I continue?
Yes, you can.
Sorry.
Yes. No, it's fine. You need to be clarified. It's fine.
Any primary has 980 children, and the classes are 29, and the average in each class is 33. There is this school, Dr. Park, which is around Ilas Contain area. We take as part of the learners there, this is the school with over enrollment. In terms of the classes that are available, they have 1,265 learners with 25 classes. Now you can see this is a school that is overcrowded, but they don't have their yard is too small for the department to provide mobile classes just to ease the pressure from the other classes. And then last school the best has 603. And the classes are 22. This school is extremely underpopulated at 27 classes. And then you have last school, Novell, which is in Modderfontein. Modderfontein is very close to Greenstone. It has 1,215 learners with 34 classrooms, and the average in this class is 85. Now, if I were to talk about teacher people ratio. In the region that I'm managing, there is no school that has a teacher people ratio that is abnormal. All of them are running between 1:35 and 1:39. So there's no school in the region that has underemployment in terms of educators.
Okay. Can I open up for everyone now so that I avoid the dialogue? Honorable Olive will be there, but yeah.
Man.
Oh, Honorable Man. Let me just translate it to Zulu so that I can. Honorable Waters.
We used to call him Mike Manzini.
Oh, Manzini. Okay.
Yeah.
Then I'll come to the button.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Now, I'm just checking on the number of classrooms and learners, which is the ratio is good. But I want to check now on the use of subjects, because perhaps now there may be 35 learners doing English in that classroom. then accounting and agriculture. I want to reconcile this information with the subject, because it may not be necessary that now these 35 learners are doing the same service to the same number. I want to get clarity on that. And then why is
nice as we are still asking, most of these schools are primary schools.
Primary schools.
Exactly. So when we talk of that number, it's a number that is consistent in all the subjects.
That's correct. Yeah. I thought for a long time I was asking that. But again now, you talk of a school that has got more than 1,200 learners, but 5 classes. It means there's no accommodation. Hmm? Then, more than 1,200 learners. Only 25 classes. Did I get it correct?
Mm-hmm.
But I want to check now, why is it that the schools are allowed now to allow learners more than they can accommodate? Because you don't have to allow learners when you don't have accommodation fees. That should not be allowed. So I want to check that now. How do you control that? Because it's always the case with principals, because they want to get more with more learners. Thank you very much.
Can I also take you on a question?
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me tell you then that some of the questions are going to end your team completely. I'm sure even honorable world cut now is getting better. For me, as I was listening to the video, I saw that this petition needed a roundtable at home to help with the entity, a roundtable like this, so that it can be clarified to the complainant and the workers. Because it's obviously the schools are not fully utilized as it is always. And on this petition, I noticed that there was a thing that the minister and the MEC should investigate. So the investigation has been done so well. The information in front of us shows that the investigation is well done. Although we have just analyzed even the signatures that are here, that there are those like Italians that have repeated and so on, which we can say the source of fraudulent information for the schools. Let me leave it to the Chairperson, but allow me to say this. The Gauteng Department of Education has done its work as it expects, and the complete Chinese, the 1,200 learners who have been mentioned by the chief director, that this is actually. So that means it needs one extra class. We are still speaking of classes and generals.
Thank you, Honorable Spotter.
No, thank you very much, Shane. And I think Honorable Basson actually has stolen a briefing, which is a good thing.
Yeah, from the same province,
anyway. Yeah. Now, looking at the petition and what is the grievance of the community. The grievance of the community says let government report on this contract of basic education within the Greenstone area. That is what the petition actually says. And I've not seen anywhere else it can be interpreted as a cry for the new school that must be constructed. I'm raising it, Honorable Chair, because had we found as the at the portfolio, that the deficit in terms of school infrastructure, that probably would have been one of the recommendations that we were going to make. And I think we must be upright around that issue. You know, I've looked at how the minister responded in the National Assembly around the question of learner teacher ratio. And she indicated in July 2012 that the ideal state will have a learner education ratio of 30 to 1. That is the ideal state. That is where we are supposed to go as we move towards 2030. And then there's a number of post-provisioning norms that have been published that highlight what is the average status quo, you know, and it speaks about ordinary primary schools 40 to 1, ordinary secondary schools 35 to 1. Now, that is important, because for me, our role is very simple as a portfolio committee, is to understand whether the Department of Education in Gauteng is upholding the rules of engagement. Rules of engagement, Honorable Chairperson, is the conduct of the education department normative? Does it respond how a caring people's organization would respond in education? I have not found out, unless there's something that is clearly an error from the report, because it says here what is a strictly and noble capacity only at 76 and 82. Now what we must be very careful as a portfolio committee is to be trying to drag the department down to engage with wasteful expenditure. What we must encourage them, understanding this petition that we have gotten, how can we be able to encourage the citizens of Greenstone to actually take their children to these schools nearby? I'm raising it because, you know, I'm concerned because there's a social factor involved here. At the moment, where is these kids going to school? Are they being transported to schools outside of the area or where? Because for us, at all times, the distance between schools is important for the quality of education offering, but also just for the child's overall livelihood. So, Chair, look, I'm engaging on nonsense standards, and I see that, look, the department is within that space. They are adhering to our protocol. The second issue, which is more important, is And this is an important, I think, debate that the colleague has raised, is the issues of integrated human settlement. Because, you see, all human settlements, residential dwelling units, it must be constructed in a manner that it takes into consideration the issues of social amenities, including education. And I think this debate on Greenstone, even if it's private sector development, it must imbued on us as a portfolio committee, in particular yourself, Chair. Maybe it's one of the recommendations we should do to the House, to the Speaker, that there's a necessity. Before Council approves new residential dwelling units, that actually the integrated human settlement development plan must be authoritatively underwritten by all the accompanying role players. So I think I am actually covered. I'm happy. It's my first experience in basic education on a petition. I think where I am, Jefferson, if I was an educator, I would have given close to a 7 for the type of report that we have received.
7 out of?
No,
six,
7.
100.
Oh.
No, the 7 is the top.
Oh, the top, okay.
The top mark, isn't it? So?
Yeah.
I mean, that's how I interpret my child's report.
Okay.
So I think the team is on top of the game. The team is on top of the game. Because I've tried to look since last night where there is a problem in terms of norms and standards. And if there's no problem with norms and standards, we must actually encourage the MEC and the team to adhere to those norms and standards. Because you see, Chair, at no stage should we make exception to the rule in terms of norms and standards. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Honorable Nkoto, you'll have to shout. I know your voice also. You guys have any tendency of being soft. It's the same WhatsApp group with the Baloyi. Shout to them. Especially Mr. Waters, Honorable Waters, and colleagues from the department. I think, yes, I'll make my input, I'll come to another water.
Okay.
I think the trust of the petition comes to water, but fortunately, he is here. Is to say, in that area, when he interacts or when they interact with the department, seemingly there are no future plans of building school as per what is here. For me, I don't think per se you are saying they need a school right as of today. I don't know whether I'm interpreting you wrongly, but from what is here, it says the pressure, but there are no future plans of the department that is having to accommodate the increasing, meaning that when from where they are seated, they see that these new developments have got the potential of increasing and putting pressure. So what are the plans of the department, of which I think he has opened up a very good discussion that we had today with the department, where the department was even showing us their plans in all the schools in Gauteng, of which for me I think it was a very good discussion that we had. But again, before you come in, Honorable Audit.
Okay, you can call me Olive. I'll take it as a compliment.
Hey, that's
fine.
Hey, man. Honorable man.
There you go.
You know, again, the response that you are getting, I think we must also get into it. I know my honorable members have asked that question again. I just want to emphasize it. It's to say, those schools are not full into their capacity. There might be a chance of to say, in these state schools, what makes parents not to be eager to take their help? I am even riding on the minister's response that you have said, to say, seemingly the parents are not interested. You know, why, if you say they are learners, there are children in the area, but the schools are not full, where do they take their children? The issue of quality again, as Honorable Mugodo was asking, but we do even see that response even here from Gauteng, to say it is clear that parents prefer their children attending schools outside the area. And it is clear, really, if you are saying there are children around, but the schools are not full. So for me, to clarify the gist of your petition, and also because it has helped us to open up even more to look at what is happening in the schools. Just get into that. Zoom into that. You are the resident.
Thank
and you can tell us more about we are as a parent or as a person.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, the thing is, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. The petition says the department hasn't got any future plans to build schools in the area. Right? And I raised that issue about all new developments at the department. It should be a matter of course that a local authority involves the education department, the health department, and other services that are needed for any community when a development is about to happen, and particularly the size of Greenstone. I'm glad to hear that the mega developments, and I presume the Kudalini one, will be included in the in having schools allocated to it. So that's great. So that was a concern, right? Now, about the schools not being full, I still don't believe that.
So I'm sorry, Mr. Yep. Because managing this before moving, I just want to be asked to that. I think as we have raised the future plans,
yes,
the response and what we are getting, it shows that it's one area that is there in the plans and coming up with all the challenges.
But
I want us to be satisfied, you know.
Well, it's not. There's no space for new schools because there's no planning. That's the point. That's what I'm trying to say. So let's say tomorrow research showed that Greenstone needed a primary school because of the need, right? Let's just say it happens. Where would a school go? You wouldn't be able to build a school because there's no ground. That's what I'm saying. It was bad planning, but I'm glad to hear that going forward, there is going to be the interaction between local authorities and the minister's office. So that I'm very happy about. Okay. Now, about the schools not being full, I still don't believe it. So I'm not judging anyone here or, you know, their character. But if you look at this document
we were given, it says Eastley Primary School 76%, right, for this one. The figures that were read out just now said they've got 978 learners for 28 classrooms. That, if you take 28 times about 40, that's the maximum they could have, right? That gives you 1,120 learners at a school that they could maximally have, right, to meet norms and standards. That means there are actually 87% occupied, not 76. That's a big, okay, it's 11% difference. But then why is this figure out so much from the figure we just read, not now? So, and that is before, I still make my point, that is that you're assuming all 28 classrooms are staffed by government funded posts, and they're not. So when you take those, when you reduce that number of government posts, you'll probably find that the school is over occupied. And that's my reasoning. That's why I wasn't trying to be difficult, Chip. That is why I wanted to know how many posts are funded by the state at Eastley Primary School. And we haven't got the answer. So I'll wait, hopefully, Chair, through you, we could ask for all the schools that were read out, how many funded, how many government posts are there, and we can work out the calculation. And I maintain, I believe all these schools are overcapacitated. Thank you, Chair.
Department, can you get here now? I think we have gone past the issue of planning and now we are here. I have to say, this school is maintaining, these schools are overcrowded.
Chair, thank you so much, and thanks for the opportunity. Truly appreciate. Let me also appreciate the petition from my long lost friend, Honourable Member Mike Manzini. We really appreciate, and that's the reason why, as a department, we take this kind of petition seriously. Because sometimes you may think the information at our disposal is the only available and correct information, only to find other parties as information. So it's very important that when people present an alternative view, we don't just shut it down, you give it an opportunity to engage in other things. And I want to thank Honorable Mike Waters for presenting this issue. I just want to take a detour, Chair, and move away from the infrastructure numbers and availability of land or not land, to argue and argue very strongly that on the basis of the asset portfolio that we have as government and as a department, there's no need for us to build an extra school tomorrow. We've got enough classroom to accommodate all our children. The challenge is, do we have enough quality schools? And that's the area where the department, we're investing our time and our resources to respond to that challenge. Because if we can make majority of our schools to provide quality education, there will be no need for people to migrate from one area and move to another area and do stuff. And that's the bottom line, and that's the debate and the argument I want to assure members, that we are investing our resources and our time now in those particular areas. The second issue becomes, what comes first? You might say the chicken and egg situation. Do we build new schools or do we upgrade the existing facilities that don't have access to water, that don't have access to sewer, that don't have access to electricity, and don't have access to... And we've taken the last in terms of improving the norms and standards that the HOD has been putting up. We've taken stock of schools that are built of zinc, shack schools or mobile schools or asbestos schools. Because these three categories of schools need to be eliminated. Mm. It embarrasses us as a department that an economic vibe or economically strong province like Gauteng still have to have shack school, asbestos schools or mobile schools. So we've taken stock. We know the number of those schools now. We formally made a bid to Treasury, and Treasury formally accepted our bid. So we are quite convinced. Come, say, 2022, definitely we won't have an asbestos school in Gauteng, and by that time we have also eliminated some of the infrastructure that is not. To me, that's where the investment, the energy, and the time need to go. so that even those that are in classroom today, they must be comfortable like any other learner in any part of the province. There must be no children that must feel that we are second-class citizens in our own province or by extension in our own country. And that's the reason why we are putting the resources just to eliminate those kind of schools. Maybe to put it formally, we've got 29 asbestos schools in our province. Mm. And everyone around this table will tell you how dangerous asbestos it is. That the sooner we eliminate that by tomorrow, the better. Because any extension of such a dangerous material in our classroom, it means that we are exposing the majority of our children to some of the issues that they're suffering. My voters has raised the issue of latest figures that have been given by indeed, and that is why in our province we've started to move towards what you call an online registration. It gives us recent statistics as we move, purely because now we are capturing data as we move. You might find that maybe the HOD's presentation was in 2018 or 2017 as well.
It was 2017.
And that one is 2017. So it's a clear pattern that the numbers are going to the ideal states because we can pull from our database and indicate where the numbers are and their resources. And I think there was one question that was raised as well, and Chair, you amplified that question, to say learners of that particular area, where do they come? Which is a pattern that is unfortunate that I really wish one day all of us would be strong enough to stand and say this is completely unacceptable. There are some communities, if you can just admit two learners from different backgrounds, the parents of those learners start to take their children out of that school. And it's something that is completely unacceptable to be quite frank. Where people would feel that if I have two other people that come from different backgrounds, it means that it's a passport for me to remove my children. And also, it means that you need to argue that it means the standard of education in that particular school is dropping, and therefore I must take my children out of that particular school. So it's one aspect that all of us must confront, attend to it, and deal with it decisively to say, our children deserve to study together, play together, and dance together. I always marvel when I see children at some of these popular restaurants when they display fields, when they play together and all these things. But when you move that to a classroom, people start to fight you. But when they eat ribs and other things, nice. But when it has to matter most, which is the classroom, people will raise the concerns that they are raising in all other issues. Member Manzina, can assure you, in terms of planning, the department can give you all the plans in each and every city, I think, probably until 2030, because that's how we plan ahead. The area where it starts to worry me, and I've raised it with the team, and fortunately I've raised it with some of the municipalities, is the failure of municipalities to update their data and also to respond to our requests. Especially the issues related to site development plans, approval of site development plans and approval of building plans as well. It takes long and some municipalities are not assisting us. And when you budget for a school and the municipality takes time to approve the plan, you want to move that funds to another area because you'll be subjected to under expenditure and other things. And some of the problems that we have, I can give Member Manzini one practical example where we're having a current dispute with a municipality that is under your control, Member Manzini.
Which one is it?
The decline in Johannesburg municipality. Mm. The problem is we have built a multi-million school, I mean almost 250 million to be quite frank, in an area called Lenthet. That school is called Noctula. School with learners with disabilities. So the municipality gave us a temporary occupation and wanted to migrate learners to that school, Chairperson. The municipality came back and said, we are revoking the temporary, we don't like the way the pylons are moving up the school and other things. I mean, you can't demolish a school that is worth 250 million. Tell us what would be the better way to deal with those particular challenges that they've identified? The school is now a white elephant there. I don't think we've occupied the school again today. We've not occupied that school. It's worth 250 million. It's standing empty. Learners that need those facilities are in one Sheikh school in Alexandra. And we've tried everything with the municipality. So I'm trying to demonstrate that where we move ahead, because the municipalities are delaying us, we are forced to go back because we need to comply with some of the municipalities. And the municipalities are moving slowly. So the part of development that we need and the kind of developmental state that we need, unfortunately, in some instances, bureaucracy is making things difficult for us to move in that particular fashion. Let me entertain the issue that we've raised about SDP post and government post. Let me tell you my view. And unfortunately, the personal view is not a government view. I really believe that we are missing an opportunity as governments if we encourage this thing of SDP post. I think all teachers need to be employed by the state, and the state needs to be ensured that you accommodate all teachers. But the reality is that the state does not have a financial muscle to respond to this. Because if you check the challenges and the problems that we are having within the education space, check. I will give you a practical example. There is a school called Parktown Boys. I was there on Friday with the HOD, last week Friday, Thursday, with the HOD. You find SDP employs somebody purely because they've got a shortcoming, and if they've got a shortcoming, they undermine or don't follow through the legal requirements that are needed, and we end up exposing our children to wrong people. And two of those teachers, on the basis of the report that we've received, sexually assaulted learners, they passed sexual racist remarks that are completely unacceptable. Because the SDPs don't have the capacity to check if this particular teacher is capable to stand in front of us. And if you check the number of SDP educators that have been appointed, you see that there is a huge challenge. We appreciate that parents are investing in this, but we really believe that it's something that needs to be attended and be sorted out. So I really share your frustration, Honourable Member Manzini, on the issue of whether are we incorporating this post when we determine this thing. And that's the point that we're in a position to attend to. Member Nchaisa, I think, raised the issue of why school continue to admit when they've reached their capacity. The problem is that education is a constitutional right. So there's no way that you can tell a child that, no, the school is full, go next door. When the child meets all the necessary requirements to be in that particular school. And that's the main challenge. But I said to the HOD, and I still insist to the HOD, say, HOD, if there is a child not to be in the classroom in Gauteng, even if you don't have a desk, even if you don't have a teacher, admit that child and we'll deal with the challenges later on. Because if you say that child must stay at home, you're exposing that child to more risk than when the child is inside the classroom. Because when other children are at school, you don't know what is happening to that child. And that's the problem. And that's the reason why people prefer to come to Gauteng, because we'll never chase anyone away. I mean, this year alone, there's 11,000 new parents that applied for new learners, and we didn't have space. We've managed to accommodate them. It's only now with the new financial budget that we are trying them to get the necessary resources and the support that we want. So even though you are correct when you say some schools admit purely because the principal feels that I'll get an extra few rents and other things, but the process of getting that amount of money takes long if you take into consideration the pressures that we normally face as a department. Indeed, Member Person was right that some of the discussions we tried, when we received this petition, I think we also met with the provincial representative, Member Hooks, to try to show the data that we are giving to you, to say, let's have this discussion so that we don't take this matter unnecessarily up. Let's talk, but unfortunately when it came here, we felt maybe this is the final stage where we'll present our side of our story. We are quite relieved that members can see from our presentation, our preparations, that we take this kind of request very seriously as a department, because we don't want people to feel that the department is not responsive, and that is why we have to bring everyone here to deal with those issues that that have been identified. Member Porters, I think you raised a very ideal situation that the minister is always emphasized, that we might be proud about 1 to 35, 1 to 40, but in reality, smaller classrooms in developed countries are better. You are 1 to 30 makes the situation better so that learners can be identified and given support. But we are a growing country. You can see from the presentation, I call it a trio challenge of in-migration that we are dealing with. People from the township feel a better education is in a former model school. For people from the rural areas believe a better education is in the township. And people from countries in Africa feel the better education is in South Africa. So we are dealing with those things. And you add three other things. I mean, our schools in Tswane are full purely because when there were challenges in Bouan, and parents could see these children are not going to write exams, they took them to Tswane. And move them from Limpopo to Utu. So there are many others beyond your normal migration. That is why planning becomes very, very difficult. We deal with this kind of challenges, but we really believe that we can attend to it and also respond positively to some of the areas that we have. And that's the reason why in Gauteng, we are fully now punting this mega human settlement. We really believe that's our answer. This thing of building RTP houses that are 200 years, 300 years, 500 years is not assisting. Because you build an RTP house there, there's no work opportunity, there's nothing. It's just, we are just throwing people and say this, we are responding to housing. The integrated human settlement that we are putting in Gauteng now, we are starting to build houses above 50,000. 50,000 upwards have all these amenities that are needed. Everyone needs to be satisfied that we can have. So we are quite excited that it will respond in the long term to what has been raised and to what we have identified in this thing. I think Honourable Member Mgodu also raised the issue of non-availability of sites. To say, if you say non-availability of sites, if those sites were available, we are going to build schools there. It's very important that in each and every community, we've got reserve land to build new schools. Because the population surely is growing. So if indeed there was land, we'll reserve it appropriately so that we can build new schools and can be in a position to have other sites that other people can do, can build. Because the other debate that we want to introduce in Gauteng, that this thing of all our schools presenting the same thing is an old-fashioned thing. We need to start to build schools that respond to the economic challenges that we are having in our province, you know, skills-based schools and all other things. I mean, we are proud now, we are working with DINEL and SAA to build a new school of aviation, a school that specializes in aviation so that children can be taught about careers in aviation while they're still at school, so that they can grow with the economy and other related matters. But other ideas that have been raised here, Chair, as a department, we really, really appreciate these advices and these ideas, and we incorporate them in our planning meetings, and the majority of the issues that have been raised here, we will also incorporate them in our planning sessions so that we can respond appropriately to the challenges that faces education in our province and by extension in our country. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much, MC. I can see DP, your hands. There's something that you want.
Yes, no. I've long been looking forward now to meet this young statement together with the HOG. This people get delivered issue. And I wish now we had an MEC like Office Saliba in that province of mine. I want to
let me not interrupt you, thank you for that. Maybe, Honourable Mortar, before I even come up, but from the discussions, from what I'm observing and hearing, when it comes to the planning part that we have been talking about in your petition, I think we've had very good discussions on that. We've acknowledged the weaknesses on the whole system, on the issue of integrated planning, so it will be limited and we'll do that. And that is the promise, as to say, they've started to do that. As we have said, your coming up with the petition might not have been the thing that you want them to be responding to tomorrow, and but we are opening up, planning for the future of our kids, and thank you very much for that. I think you have done that. But also, with the issue of the pressure at STEM schools as of now, it's the homework for all of us. You will be in communication with me, as you say, some of the things here you don't really think they are correct. You'll go back and do whatever you say.
Yes.
Our doors are ever open, you'll be communicating, even with the department itself. They will go back and ascertain even more as to say what are the numbers saying. But on the gist of your petition, really, I think we did manage to do a breakthrough out of this meeting as to say, yes, in future we must always have those plans. We have cautioned us. We are getting an indication that within that area, the space is self-limited, meaning that there were not that much of good planning of which in future, those are the things that need to be considered. I think we need to thank you very much.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you,
Chair.
But let me say one thing. With this issue of Nocturne, what is really the problem? Because I think it's very disturbing to hear that it's one school that we're all looking at to say to even accommodate, as we are talking of immigration, even learners from other provinces to come
school,
here. Exactly. It's one school that was an asset to the country. So what happened? If you can give us a clearer picture. Maybe before you even respond, I think honorable report of hand up. The feeder zones. Before you even respond, because I was going to say, let us use this opportunity that you are here holding for you, even just to brief us now on your online registration, 2018, what happened. We are always learning from the provinces whenever we are together. So this time, Honorable Manzini has opened that opportunity before we even come to Gauteng. Let us utilize that. Just share with us your if challenges were there or your victories in your online registration. Because as we go even to other provinces, what we learn from you, we also share with them. So I don't know, with all the questions that have been raised, who is going to be that one? HOD?
Thank you very much, Chairperson and honorable members of the on the issue of Nocturne, the Department of Infrastructure Development, which is the department responsible for the building of schools, had obtained approval, temporary approval from the city of Johannesburg to consolidate or to build on sites which had been previously declared agricultural. they were zoned as agricultural, and subsequently they then were changed to educational. But that school is located and is built on three or four different pieces of land parcels. And those land parcels must then be consolidated to make them one address. Now, at the point when, after the construction had been completed, then those that are in the administration are now saying, but how could you build when there is land X and land Y and land Z and land XX have a pilot moving? Why did you have to build on that? Now they are delaying on providing for a certificate that consolidates all those four sites to make it one site so that we can take occupation. And that's an ongoing challenge that we have, that we're waiting to deal with. And I must say, if we have that school, as education, we can't take our young people there because we'll be exposing them to, it will be illegal occupation. And we don't want to be held liable for illegal occupation of a site. And we hope that there will be resolution. On the second matter that Honorable Mukot is raising about the feeder zone, you'd recall just at the point when the then Deputy Chief Justice Museneke retired, on his last day of retirement actually, he ruled on a case that was brought before the Constitutional Court. The department was, FESAS, one of the SGB associations, has taken the department to court on admission regulations. At that point, the court ruled in favor of the department in terms of its regulations, that they were all sound and clear. However, the Deputy Chief Justice further made a ruling that the department, the MEC for Education, must declare feeder zones, because currently we're using admissions into schools is on the basis of work address, home address, but it must be within a 5 kilometer radius. Now, they said on the basis of the new movement and all of related matters that are happening in housing, we must determine where the feeder zones and these feeder zones that the MEC must then be lodged with the Constitutional Court. It had required us as a department to go to each individual SGB and each school to also determine the geographic location by ward and all of those related matters. If you think about how we build schools as well, that for every 1,000 households, you have one primary school. Now we have had to do a mapping of all of those different areas and also taking into account some best experiences, international experiences. We are now at a point where those maps have been defined. There are consultations that are taking place with the individual schools, and we hope that we will soon be able to launch the feeder zones with the schools. What we pick up about that feeder zones is that they will not become a static thing. And MEC would, on an annual basis, have to reconsider given the changes and the expansions that may happen going forward. In respect of online admission, MEC?
Thanks, Chair. Maybe let's appreciate the opportunity to share what we believe is a very important milestone within the education space to introduce the online registration. Chair, previously we had three main challenges. The first one was that the data of government was in the hands of SGBs, not in the hands of parents, because parents will go to SGBs to enroll, and the SGB on their own will select who they want to be in the school, and those that they don't want, they'll not even give them feedback, they'll not even give them information, and they will not even provide reasons why they're not taking their children. But the most dangerous thing is that the department had to write to schools to say, give us this information, which was a misnomer, because the department is the one that must have this particular information, not the other way around. And we felt that we needed to change that aspect. But secondly, schools were introducing things that you call barriers to entry. Before they give you a form, they would say, pay this amount of money, or pay this registration fee, or pay this admin fee. and that we felt that it was discriminating to those that might not have that amount of money, meaning. And it was very, very difficult to monitor that. You can send a circular that says, don't do this. But you'll get report where some will say, I'm not admitted because they've accepted this. And then because of competition, schools also upped the game. They wanted to attract, so schools were in competition with who can attract the best parents that can pay school fees quickly. So then they will say, before we give you a form, give us your salary advance. give us this, give us this. So on the basis of that, those that they feel can pay school fees quickly were admitted quickly. And those that couldn't. So the administration of admission has lots and lots of discrimination. And we felt as a department that we needed to introduce a system that is fair, equitable, that can account for each and every application. Because what schools will do, they say, we're opening for admission. People will queue outside the school. They collect the forms, but if they look at you and say, no, but this one is not properly dressed to be in our school. Mm-hmm. Your form then is placed somewhere. And you have no recourse. When you call, they say, no, we have not been taken. And what recourse? You don't have reasons. You don't have a reason that can be advanced to you. So we tailor-made an online registration to eliminate all these barriers. So everyone is equal, everyone is faceless, you don't know who's applying, and you only use the regulations as they are for you to be admitted within our school. So we went, and this is the part that excites me about the online registration. We went to universities that are providing computer science. We said, give us your top students, those that are in your final year, that we can share an idea with them. And indeed, universities gave us these students. We had six, we had a session with them. Can you figure out a software like this? The young, this youth were quite excited that government has confidence in them. And that's how this system was developed. It's not a system that is owned by consultants. It's not a very expensive system that we paid millions of rands. We just went and picked up young talent in universities, and they developed these things. So it's a system that you can give it to every government department. So if Eastern Cape or Western Cape or whoever need it, we can give them on a disk and say, here it is, free of charge. So they can't. It is not owned. The IP is owned by government, not owned by private sector. So the new online system, when it started, obviously it had teething problems. I mean, if you have young people that they've just given this new task, you'll expect that thing. Last year we modernized it, but this year it's at its peak. What we've done, we've put in the databases of government institutions, the Department of Home Affairs, local government. So when you type your ID number, it automatically populate your name, surname. So you don't have to type. So within 5 minutes, you can apply for your child to go in grade 1, grade 8, and every application is accounted for. So anyone who applies, if you have not been taken, you get a message why you're not taken. And you have the right to appeal. So you appeal to the district, you appeal to the HOD, then finally you appeal to the MEC. But previously, that appeal process was just ignored. So that is why now we've got an efficient online registration. Last year on day one, we registered almost 98,000 people. This year on day one, we registered 161,000 people. So, and the system can take 30,000 new applications per second. So every second we can take 30,000 new applications. So we really believe that is a way to go. So the state is in charge. And that is why we now know if this school is full or not full. No school can now say we are full. We have to declare the school full on the basis of the information that we have. We are still on grade 1 and 8, but we are tempted to then broaden it to other grades so that we can have a single reliable data that our schools get. So that even a child, if he moves from one school to another, they don't have to fill forms and other things. We've got the information, people can just put that in the database and we are indeed excited. It's moving very smoothly now. The last day for registration is the 28th of May. And from the 18th, that's the birthday of Madiba, we'll start to send SMSs to parents to say your child is placed in this good place in this school. Hopefully, it will make parents to be happy. Thank you.
Before I thank you,
Honourable
Chair, don't you want me to give you an opportunity to repeat what you said?
No, I was saying.
After what you said. No, thank you very much. Thank you very much. I think, as we are saying, we are ever learning from you, and I believe even all the provinces will be learning from what is happening. So that we avoid that stumbling. If we say the first day of school should be, of schooling should, we should see our learners being taught and being classed. I think this is the way, a correct way to go. Honourable members, I think we have come to the end of our meeting. Honourable Waters is satisfied, he's happy, includes everything he has been telling me as he's leaving. Thank you so much, really, for the good presentation, because I think it's through this presentation, through this good investigation that you have made, that you have succeeded to have such a good meeting. Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We are meeting next week, honorable members. What time, maybe let me give honorable... let me give Mr. Brown an opportunity to brief us to say what time should we use Parliament to visit each other.
Thank you, Chair. We have received the bill for the...
Just a moment, Mr. Brown.
Vehicles, 5 to 7 seaters, will be stationed at Port Hayes at 9 o'clock. We're going to try and leave here at about 9:30 with all the buses that have arrived by then. We'll just go from the buses into the vans and we'll go down to Kales River, the Kales River Teacher Center. That's where Vodacom will be hosting on their collaborative work with the department. They thought it important that they do it at the school so they can showcase some of the work they've been doing as protocol. And then we should be done by around 1 o'clock and we'll then move back to Parliament, or if members so wish, we could shuttle you back to your villages. That's all we're looking for.
Next week, Tuesday. Our meeting on Tuesday. Not tomorrow, but so don't wake up here and come here. it's a standing meeting with Vodacom, but they've requested that we do it in one of their teacher centers so that they can showcase their work. It's a portfolio committee, oversight, everything, thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you, Comrade GP. We're happy to see you.
I'm
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.